Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This program has been brought to you by Cider Week New York City, happening November 6th through 15th, 2015. For more information, check out ciderweeknyc.com.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every Tuesday, always late. Supposed to be here at 12. Am not. Run until about 12:50 or so. Yeah, yeah. Got Nastasio the Hammer Lopez here in the shipping container, and in the engineering booth we got Jackie Molecules Inslee and Rebecca. How you guys doing?
Oh yeah, I gotta get myself a bomb. I'm good. It's good to be back. Yeah. I'm just playing this crazy video on loop.
Oh yeah, dude. Oh, I should talk about that.
It's horrifying.
So you know, I was going through my box of crap the other day, and I came across. By the way, call in your questions 2-718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. So I'm going through my box of crap the other day, and I notice an old VHS tape from when I was in art school, like back in like 95, 96, something like this. And it's a piece I did called What I Am Thinking About. And pretty much, and I had been making like flipbooks of this image in my mind for years, like little flipbooks. Have any of you guys ever seen my little elf character I draw sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah, it's that elf character. It's been with me for years. So anyway, I uploaded the video to YouTube. I got someone to digitize the VHS, which is super low quality. I wish I could find the original discs. And by the way, like, it was really hard. Like, when you see it, you'll know. Like, it was really hard because I'm walking a very long distance in it. And so to do the chroma key on it back in the, like, mid-90s, like, the computers weren't so great. And so I rolled a giant, like, 200-foot-long sheet of paper down my mom's street outside of her house. I had a friend walk behind me with a giant blue sheet that I had painted, like rolling it behind me as I walked. And so, you know, there's some bleed through. I had some problems with the chroma key. I had some interlacing problems when I was doing the early. It was like After Effects version 1 or something like that. Whatever.
But what does it mean?
Okay, well, let me explain what the video is. It's on YouTube. You can go look at it. Like, search.
The chat room got it.
Oh, they got it?
They got it.
All right. So it's called. So basically, it's just this elf who's me, like an infinite number of me, just jumping into a wood chipper over and over and over and over and over again with a band playing. Like, that's what it is.
That there's no more meaning than that. Isn't art school supposed to be about meaning?
This is what I'm thinking about. I told you this many times.
I know, but what's
people who think
Rebecca
that they're
so said she can figure out. She could write an essay on it.
Yeah, of course. I spent, you know, like many, many, many hours critiquing this piece and, you know, like defending it and critiques and all this other stuff.
Kind of felt like Lemmings.
Yeah.
Bit, you know?
Well, the whole point of it, I'll give you a little hint, Stas, a little insight.
So
I'll give you a little insight. Notice that I'm not upset about it. Just jumping in the wood chipper.
Yeah.
Just there. Here I am jumping in the wood chipper again and again and again. Just keep jumping in the wood chipper. And it's very important that it's not gore, that it's like it's, you know, it's cartoon blood coming out of the side of the wood chipper. And I believe this is pre-Fargo wood chipper. I believe this is pre-Steve Buscemi jamming his enemies into a wood chipper. Pretty sure. Anyway, so, and pretty much any time you see me staring off into the distance nowadays, this is what's going on in my head. Ban-inch, dan-inch, dan-inch, dan. Yeah.
Tim in the chat room says it reminds him of a Kraftwerk video.
Oh, I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah. I went back to my high school, which I hadn't been to in, you know, like 5-6 years or something like that. And I was like, I need a sousaphone and I need a bass drum and a cymbal. And they're like, all right, they let me take it to my mom's house and like film the video with that stuff. I sewed the elf outfit myself. And the curly shoes are real. I still own them. And there used to be a leather joint in the in Soho. They moved outside up near Chelsea. They might be gone now. Run by a guy who anytime you bought anything from him as you leave, he'd be like, God bless. That's all you'd ever say, God bless. 8R leather. Yeah, I got all the green suede from him, made the lasts, made the shoes. You know, it was a full service, you know, art project back in the day. Anyway, still thinking about it. Figured I'd post it there.
Wait, how was your Halloween?
How many listeners did I just lose when they're like, that's what that guy's thinking about?
I'm out. Wait, how was your Halloween?
The kids were freaking animals. Crazy. Listen to this. I had 150 full-size freaking candy. Full-sized candy bars. And by the way, a good selection. Jack, name me some candy bars.
Snickers.
Had it.
Three Musketeers.
Had it.
Twix.
Had it.
Mr. Goodbar.
Did not. But I did. I had Fifth Avenue, and I had Paydays.
Ooh, Paydays.
Payday. I like the Payday. Underrated bar. Everyone who can have peanuts enjoys the Payday, but no one talks about the Payday.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Also, like, I always like to have a certain amount. I also had, like, the entire M&M, like, you know, all of the new and the regular M&Ms.
Ooh, like the pretzel M&Ms.
Oh, yeah. Mega, which are the large-scale M&Ms.
They have coconut, right?
I don't know if they had those at the store, but I also had, like, not the full range of Skittles, because there's 150 different kinds of Skittles almost at this point. But, like, you know, a decent Skittle selection. The full-size Twizzler, which, by the way, would be my call. The full-size Sour Patch Pack. Yeah, Stas has turned off her vegan face for that one. And, so anyways, it's like, you know, I had 150 and pounded it. Gone. I had to go out. I bought 50 more and they still wiped us out. Booker and Dax were so depressed because they thought they were going to have all this candy left over. But then, of course, when, you know, we started cooking dinner and Booker got picking anyway, so Jen took away all of his candy. I don't think she threw it away. She's not that. She's not the, it's going in the chute. Because you see, when you live in New York, you have a trash chute. Once that stuff's gone, there's no getting it back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not like some sort of secret fake trash like you might have somewhere in the suburbs or something like this. It's like, if it goes in the chute, it's done. There's no like going out to the curb and trying to resurrect it or anything. You know what I mean?
We have an announcement. Jen's going to be on the show at some point.
Well, that's not an announcement if we don't have the point yet.
Before the end of this year.
We have to say it out loud, and then it'll happen,
yeah.
Maybe, right?
Well, exactly. Do people actually want my wife to come on? Or were they going to call and ask her questions or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, tweet on in if that's what you want to have happen. Let me know. So, you know, the museum, this has been the first week of the museum being open to the public. Tomorrow will actually be the whole first week because we're closed Monday, Tuesday. So we were open from Wednesday to Sunday. And I think it went really well. I still have some stuff to fix, but I think it went really well. And I've been going to Greenpoint more. So I've been going to all the Polish joints. I got to get Lukasz, you know, to help me out. So in Poland, they have this soup, which I think is called Żurek. I think that's how you pronounce it. And it's got in it this stuff called Żur, which I thought was Zur, as in like Zur in the Codan Armada. Are you a Last Starfighter fan? Jack, Last Starfighter, anyone?
No.
Robert Preston's last movie, freaking the great Robert Preston from The Music Man. You're familiar with Robert Preston, Stas?
No.
The hell? The hell is wrong with you people? Seriously, America, you live in it, learn it. Anyway, The Last Starfighter was awesome because it was one of the first times when video games were painted in a very kind of good light. This guy did nothing but play this video game called The Last Starfighter, and he lived in a trailer park, and he played it, but he got a universe-wide high score, and it turned out that these video games had been planted all over the universe, which is strange because you think that, like, you know, they would have had better technology all over the universe, but no, they were using 1980s video games. So they planted them all over the universe, and people who got super high scores were actually sucked up, brought out into space to become starfighters to fight against Zur and the Codan Armada. See what I'm saying? See? Anyway, and so...
Polish.
So anyway, so Zur But I didn't tell you my favorite part about Last Starfighter. Well, if anyone cares about Last Starfighter, we can have a Last Starfighter conversation someday. The best part about that is this guy, this is a life lesson I took. At the end, the Kodans are smashing into a planet. Like, their starship has been destroyed by, you know, the Starfighter guy. They're going in, and the guy who's kind of a wussy is like, what? Because the plane's, the thing's crashing. What do we do now? And the guy goes, he has this little eyepiece with a motor on it that goes, like a heads up display. And he goes, and he just looks at him and goes, we die. And then the thing goes, but I'm like, that's a baller way to go out. The Kodans know how to go out. They might have been evil, but they know how to go out. So back to Zur, aka Zur. It's fermented rye flour, so it's like a sourdough, but real thick, and it's used as the base of this sour soup called Żurek, which is really awesome. Lukasz said it's like kind of Polish version of miso, but the soup is really good. I need the short story is I need to learn a lot more about Polish food, because everything I've had so far, even though obviously I don't know how to actually make it, so I'm just guessing based on what I read, what the stuff's supposed to taste like, but stuff's straight up delicious. You know what's really good is sauerkraut and mushroom, like, hacked together and cooked like pierogi mix. I think it's from a pierogi mix. But anyway, good stuff. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today. So what was I supposed to be talking about today?
We have some Twitter questions.
All right. Let's do a Twitter question, then I'll do a question that came in on the – give me a Twitter question. Give it to me.
Well, first off, do you like the new heart and how they got rid of the star for the fave?
Wait, what? The new what?
They got rid of the star for favoriting tweets, and there's a little tiny heart.
I hadn't noticed. I don't know. Do I like it or do I hate it, social media queen?
I don't like it.
So what's the difference?
It's a heart.
So they're trying to Instagram it? Is that it? It's trying to be more like Instagram?
Yes, exactly.
I like things to be separate. I don't like muddy. I don't like waters muddied. I agree with you. I'm a category kind of a guy. I like categories to stay the same. You know how, like, when you go to college and then you come home for the first, like, 10 years, something changes in the house every time you come home and it pisses you off? It's like that. It's like that. And, by the way, the guy who does the video, the guy who did the last Sears All video, which you should all take a look at the last Sears All video that Chris did for us, the one where he's, like, has the secret Sears All that whispers and stuff. Anyway, he claims to have done this, what we're talking about, changing, like, a well-loved program. He got some serious, serious backlash. So is there serious backlash on this Twitter thing or no?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say,
Questions are... Yeah. I made a persimmon puree. The next day, it has solidified into a very, very firm gel. Any idea why and how to prevent that?
Well, I mean, it's full of pectin. But the first question I have is: What kind of persimmon are we talking?
That's all I got.
What kind of persimmon? We need to figure out what kind of persimmon we're talking about here. Because you know what's new? I've never cooked with. I've always wanted to. Is the native persimmon? I saw one growing in Washington D.C. once on the mall, and even though I was probably expressly forbidden to, I jumped up, grabbed one, and ate the hell out of it because no one's going to eat it. What do you guys think about this? When you're in a place, right, and like obviously if everybody took a persimmon, there wouldn't be any persimmons. But the fact of the matter is that all of them, everyone is going to hit the ground and rot, right? Every single one. So if you really, really care, like really care, shouldn't you just eat one? What do you guys think?
Like at the pear place.
Yeah, like at the Brogdale, right?
Gotta eat them to save them.
You gotta eat them to save them. And I'm not even ripping the tree down. It's not like I have to, like, slice the bark off and, like, girdle the tree like you do with a pig. And you murder it to save it. Like, this is... Yeah. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Was I wrong to take the persimmon?
No way.
When I was at Monticello, you know, was I wrong to taste some of the fruit that was clearly going to go to waste because nobody was eating it?
No way.
Yeah, right? I mean...
Yeah, I took a rock from the...
That's evil. You better not say it on air. You're going to get a blast. Okay, I want you guys to know what Stas is really like. All right, say it.
From the, what's it called? Parthenon.
Yeah, Stas took a freaking rock from the freaking Parthenon, which is just wrong. It's evil. It's like destroying cultural patrimony. It's evil.
Under a tree.
It's just wrong. It's just wrong. Yeah. Yeah, give me that. Give me that again. Survey says... Yeah, it's not right. It's not freaking right. All right, so let me get a question that we got, then we'll go back to Twitter questions. Hey, Jack. This is going into Jack. First, I wanted to thank Dave and Nastasia for answering my writing question back in March when I asked Nastasia about Stanford and how Dave and Nastasia met. This time I have a question for Dave regarding writing cookbooks. This past year, I helped a bioengineering professor teach one of the first cooking classes at Stanford that was essentially the science of cooking. He's considering taking his lecture material along with recipes and writing a science of cooking cookbook. So I wanted to ask, what are some of the biggest challenges you faced when writing your book? Also, any advice or suggestions would be great. Best, Kevin. All right. Well, here's the first one straight up. Don't write somebody else's book. So what you have to do is just look at McGee's book and be like, how is my book going to be different, right? So that's the first thing. Like you have to differentiate yourself from Harold McGee's book. You also have to differentiate yourself from the Modernist Cuisine series.
Kenji's book.
Will you let me finish? Yeah. Kenji's book, which, by the way, apparently is selling like great guns, like selling like crazy. So they're all a little bit different, right? So McGee's book is obviously like the reference book, right? The Modernist Cuisine book is the book for kind of new techniques, you know what I mean, in terms of like just an exposition of new techniques in cooking. Kenji's book is kind of like home recipes treated in kind of a scientific fashion and kind of like his blog, you know, that he wrote – well, his columns for Serious Eats, if you know that. So, these are kind of like three and then there's a host of other ones. So like on baking and science, you have like Shirley Corriher and you have like all these other. So it's like your goal is going to be to differentiate yourself. Right now, if you're just saying you're going to write it as a textbook and you're going to force people to buy it and all you care about is like the fact that you're going to force a certain number of students to buy every year, that's different. But if you're actually writing a book, especially in that field where you have some big things to live up to, just make sure you're differentiated. And then, you know, obviously if you're dealing with, a bioengineering person, I don't know what their cooking chops are like, right? So it helps when you're writing a cookbook to really know the subject, like, really well. So, like, maybe they have really great cooking chops. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's helpful. I think it's a lot easier to write a book when – you know, the depth of knowledge you have on the subject is 2, 3, and 4 times deeper than what you actually write, because then everything seems kind of richer and more textured. You know what I'm saying, Stas?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, is this good advice? Anyway, what are you, is this good advice? I don't know.
It's okay.
It's not great. It's okay. Also, test the hell out of your recipes. Just test the hell out of your recipes. If you should test them, but also you should get someone who doesn't know the subject to test them. Also, you should get someone who doesn't know science to read your text, because it's almost impossible for a science head to write a science book that actually makes sense to someone who doesn't already know the answers. So, give it to people to read who don't understand. Now, listen, don't. When the person comes back and tries to change it to something that makes sense to them, almost invariably you will look at what they've changed it to and you'll be like, no, that's scientifically wrong now. Now it's wrong. And what that means, that's a note to you in your head that you didn't explain it right the first time. So you need to recast the entire thing. And that's why it takes forever to freaking write anything. You know what I'm saying, Stas? Is that better now?
Yes, yeah.
Also, if it's thick enough, Nastasia will use it to separate hot and cold foods. But it has to be like 300, 400 pages and like, you know, just that right thickness to make sure that by the time she gets off the subway, can't be too heavy. She can't use Kenji's book for this. So like, you know,
yours
like
is perfect.
Yeah, mine is the perfect thickness to keep the hot side hot and the cold side cold. All right. Let me see. Next question. This from Pedro Paiva. I think that's how you pronounce that. P-A-I-V-A. Paiva? Mm-hmm. Anyway. Hope everything's okay over there. Probably already gotten tons of questions regarding this issue, but if not, can we have Dave's point of view on the red and processed meats thing from the World Health Organization?
Oh, yeah. That's what they were talking about last week.
World. Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is, I asked my girlfriend, who is a doctor, and the answer was that almost everything will cause cancer if you eat it like there's no tomorrow. Keep up with the good work. Okay, so I didn't have a boat ton of time to look into this, but I went to the WHO, which is who.int, right? Is their website, and I looked up their Q&A. And so you got to remember is all they've done is they've classified. Because in my head, that's how Justino is said too. You know what I mean? But the. They classified meat as a carcinogen, meaning that They feel the epidemiological studies are good enough to say that it causes cancer. You know, definitely. You know what I mean? Good epidemiology. But not that doesn't mean that there's a huge increase related to it. First of all, let me just be very clear. As far as I can tell, and someone tweeted and tell me I'm wrong. Please. Someone tweeted and tell me I'm wrong. But I don't believe there's any new studies. This is just an aggregation and a decision based on studies that are already out there. So if you already thought the studies that were out there were crap, were horse hockey, then nothing has changed, right? And here's what they said. Here's what they said. According to – this is how many – question 12 – how many cancer cases every year can be attributed to the consumption of processed meat and red meat? You ready for this?
Who said this?
This is who? According to the most recent estimates by the Global Burden of Disease Project, the Global Burden of Disease Project, an independent academic research organization, about 34,000 cancer deaths per year worldwide are attributable to diets high in processed meats. That seems really weak. 34,000 worldwide? Worldwide? How many billions are we now, guys?
Also, show me those diets.
Yeah, I know. Look, all those studies are horrible. But show me 34,000 out of how many billion?
Eight.
I don't know. Many. Anyway, are attributable to diets high in processed meat. And here, eating red meat has not yet been established as a cause of cancer. However, if the reported associations were proven to be causal, the Global Burden of Disease Project has estimated that diets high in red meat could be responsible for 50,000 cancer deaths per year worldwide. Also, remember, these are diets high in those things, not any consumption of those things, but high in those things. And so we're talking, I believe, for processed meat, what they're talking about is 50 grams a day. So roughly 2 ounces of processed meat every day. Which is more than I eat. I mean, I wish I ate more processed meats because I love them. They are delicious. I don't know. Anyway, so I think pretty weak. But at some point, either someone that I know.
I think that's this percentage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot of zeros before the first number. Yeah. Anyway, the point being that I wouldn't worry about it overly much. And you know what? Like, if I had to give up country ham or, like, take that billion percentages of zeros and add that to my thing. Like, I think I take the ham.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Got a caller.
Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, Dave. I have a question about wine. I've been making a concerted effort to drink more wine and to start appreciating it more.
Good man.
Yeah, nice.
And in my efforts, I'm wondering when you're sort of profiling the aroma of a wine, is there any technique or way that you're aware of, and this is good for food in general, to sort of like reset your sense of smell? Because like I get like 30 seconds into smelling a glass and then like get used to the smell, and I can't sort of latch on to what exactly it reminds me of before I can't even smell it anymore.
It's a good problem. So I think everything depends on kind of what you're specifically tasting. Like, what there are things, and I wish I had remembered, why am I so stupid, like the flavorists who do this kind of thing for a living, smell things for a living, they have things that they specifically do to kind of get around this. And Jack Fastag, the guy who was our consultant in the exhibition, was like, yeah, I do, and now it's erased. I remember him saying, yeah, I do, and that's gone. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I hate that. But, like, it depends. So, like, for instance, like, for palate cleansing, if you're doing country hams, it's apple juice, not cider, juice. When you're doing wines, I mean, a lot of times, if you're eating something, it's relatively easy. You just want to make sure you're eating something that's not going to, like, rip the wine apart. You know what I mean? Like, nothing in high in acid, too high in acid. But also, like, I just, like, put it down for a while and do other stuff till I clear out and then kind of pick it up again. But I don't do like constant nosing. Like, I'm not. We should ask Jeff. Why don't you text Jeff?
I don't have his number.
Anyone tweeting in what they use? Come on, chat room. Hook me up. But I also find it's really like.
Smell your hand.
Ooh, let me see. Onions. They say chop onions. You know, if you chop a lot of onions, like, it takes me 2 or 3 days to get the onion smell off my fingertips. That doesn't happen to you? Or if you eat a lot of onions, it
comes
out?
Garlic. Yeah, that happens to me with garlic.
It's the worst, right? Don't you hate like waking up in the morning and like you garlic fingers?
Away.
You're like, get out. There's actually like research studies on this. So like, I wouldn't mean, man, I don't know. Smell your hands. Tell me if they smell like garlic. I don't know. No? What did you cook last night, Seth?
Eggplant parm.
Ooh, really?
Mm-hmm.
For real?
I didn't bread it or fry it.
So in what sense eggplant parm stuff?
Just the eggplant and sauteed in, with tomato sauce and a mozzarella slice on top.
Nice.
That's not eggplant parm.
Phil was over. He didn't want to eat heavy.
What?
I don't.
Did you squeeze out all the water?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Was it stringy?
No. I bought a thin one.
And the skin wasn't gross?
No.
All right. Jack, what's your thoughts? And Rebecca, what are your thoughts on the non-fried eggplant parm?
I think it kind of has to be fried.
You would like it.
I'm sure I'd like it.
Although, in the hit pressure cooking book, I haven't tried it, but there is a pressure-cooked eggplant parm style thing. Here's my thing. I'm sure it's delicious. It's not what I consider an eggplant parm.
Sure, but what do I call it?
I don't know. Was there Parmigiano on it?
No.
Then what's an eggplant parm? I mean, like, quite clearly. No parm. No freaking parm. Was it made by someone from Parma? No parm. No part Parmigiano. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Because Phil's not eating much dairy either.
What a dillweed. It's like, the hell? Just eat a raw eggplant. Just give him a raw freaking eggplant and just chow on it like a goat. You know what I mean? Oh, Christ's sakes.
Wait, did you answer this guy's question?
I don't know. Did I?
Is he still there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
All right, cool. Well, listen, I want people to tweet in the answer because I'm just not good at that stuff. You know what I mean? Anyway, someone will do it. All right. Okay, let me see. I'm actually going to get to some of these questions here. Okay, this is from Wade Tanith. Longtime listener, want to say thanks for the interesting food ideas. Last week, Chris from the Green Zone, this is a follow-up. This is a good one, people. Last week, Chris from the Green Zone called in about his attempt to make a chartreuse-like liquor, which precipitated, you know, flocked out after adding the honey. I think you are correct, suggesting it could be an ionic reaction of suspended green particles with cations in the honey. One idea occurred to me from an application in the pharmaceutical industry, which uses hydroxypropyl cellulose. Hydroxypropyl cellulose, HPC, to stabilize suspensions of nanoparticles. The HPC is non-ionic and forms a barrier around small particles, preventing them from agglomerating. I love that word, agglomerate. Don't you like that word, Saz? Mm-hmm. Why, you don't like it?
No.
Does it sound like spore to you?
A little bit.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You like aggregate better?
Yeah.
I prefer agglomerate.
I don't.
Do you like the word pre-agglomerated?
No.
Okay. I do. Agglomerate. It sounds like a space word. Agglomerate. It's also unique in that it has excellent solubility in water and ethanol. I think it could help to provide stability for this liqueur. Using sugar instead of honey should help too. My suggestion would be to use 0.3% of, I'm going to spell it, CELNYHPC, which stands for hydroxypropyl cellulose, SSL, to stabilize the particles in the liqueur. It is the lowest molecular weight grade of HPC produced, so it will give some extra body/mouthfeel, but not thicken too much. For a liter of liqueur, you would add 3 grams of HPC. Dry mix the 3 grams of HPC with about 50 grams of sugar. Put the liquor in a blender on low and then add the HPC sugar mixture. Blend for 30 seconds. It will get a little foamy but will settle to be clear. Full disclosure, Wade works for Aniso, NISSO, which manufactures this product. But anyway, he's playing with it with cocktails for his own fun anyway at home, so yeah, give it a try. He said he'd send us some. Should we get some and play around with it? Yeah, send us some.
Wait, the liqueur or the...
No, the freaking HPC. Hey, Jack, if they're going to mail samples like this, where should they mail it to?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will provide that address in a second. In the meantime, we have a caller.
Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, Dave, this is Rob in New Hampshire. How are you?
Doing all right. How's New Hampshire doing?
It's nice. Beautiful weather.
Yeah, you setting off fireworks, living free or dying? Love that place.
It's the way to be in life.
Yeah. What's up?
Hey, quick question. I want to melt a bunch of chocolate in my circulator. So I was just going to vacuum bag it and throw it in overnight to melt it down. Is that a safety problem?
No. No, it's 100% fine. The only issue, and I know people that do this because you can get exactly accurate, so you don't have to do it like up and down, because you can get it so that you never melt out, you know, all of the good crystals in it. So yeah, it's great. The only problem is you have to make 5 billion% sure that you don't get water in it.
Right, right.
So it's like
it'll just seize up and be nasty.
Yeah, and like unless you're doing like a lot. Because it's not going to be like hyper like thin, probably like there's a tendency to kind of lose some to the bag. So like you know you gotta you know dry the hell out of the bag before you're done, and then get like one of those plastic pastry scrapers, put it like down over your thing, and shoop, and like you know get all the stuff out, or else you end up losing a lot. Especially I don't know what kind of bag you're using, but if you're using just start something out. You know, with the crisscrosses. You know what I'm talking about? Food saver.
Food saver.
If you're using a food saver bag, like you're going to lose a lot just to those crisscrosses. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, it's totally doable.
Yeah. Is it a problem having it 30 to 45 C for 12 hours?
Nah.
Or is the water activity make that a non-safety issue?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, there's like remember there's a zero water activity.
Okay,
and you know they're you know, yeah. I can't imagine anything that's gonna happen in that. I mean, look, someone write me back and say I'm killing people, but I know people that do it, and you know, obviously people store chocolate at that temperature in its molten state for a long, long time, not in a vacuum, but they'll have a giant vat of it, and then you know the stuff at the bottom is not like it's getting a lot of oxygen, so. Yeah, no.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I looked up some numbers, and cocoa butter is like 0.41 to 0.56 water activity, and couverture is around 0.3. So nothing lives below 0.85 or something, right?
Yeah. I don't know the exact numbers, but remember, like, water is the complete enemy. Like, water is the complete enemy of chocolate. So I don't think – in other words, like, I don't think anything will grow. You're not killing anything, so if there's anything in there, it you know, it's not going to kill it. You know what I mean? But I don't think it's there's nothing there for it. There's nothing there for things to grow on. You know what I mean?
Right. So you don't have to worry about the botulinum toxin. That's always been my big scare with putting stuff in bags.
Yeah, no, look, it's also like got like a pretty hefty dose of sugar in there, which even if there was a little water, you know, would like form such a concentrated syrup that it would be hosed. You know, nothing can – I don't think anything can survive in that.
Awesome.
Yep. All right. Have fun.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
So this mailing address.
Right, yeah, do it.
Yeah, so it's 1130 Bedford Ave, Box 301, Brooklyn, New York, 11216. You can rewind if you missed that.
Yeah. Let me take the last question that we had in on the email, and then maybe, Rebecca, you have a couple more for me for Twitter or no? Yeah,
sure. That's a thumbs up.
All right, cool. All right. Greetings from Pittsburgh, from Justin. This is two questions. Greeting from Pittsburgh. This is Sarah. I've been making an aging eggnog, raw eggs, cream, maple syrup, nutmeg, cinnamon, a bourbon, rum, and brandy for a few years now, and I think I am narrowing in on the best mix of ingredients and aging. The longest I have let it age is about 13 months, but I usually let it go for 11 months. My question to Dave is, how long is too long? Is there a point it will stop mellowing out and begin to be unpleasant, or is it possible it will get even better? Totally possible, Sarah, that it might get better. I don't know what the answer – like, because here's the issue. Here's what you need to do. Like, obviously. Duh. What you need to do – I've had eggnog 2 years and 3 years old, I think. Nick Bennett, remember, had some that was – I forget how old the oldest one he had was. Nick Bennett, who now is, you know, at Porch Light, killing it, doing awesomely. I forget how old the oldest one he has, but the question is it going to get better? That's going to be a matter of taste. And so here's what you need to do. You need to make the same recipe 3 years running. You can make whatever you want like as well, but you're going to make like at least enough to save a bottle and have a bottle every year. So you're going to make at least 3 extra bottles, okay? And then you're going to do that every year. And then year 3 or year 4, I guess, you'll have – a bottle of 3-year-old, a bottle of 2-year-old, and a bottle of 1-year-old, and you'll taste them all side by side.
I think we have some at the lab that's like 3 years old now.
In that low boy?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Does it have to be refrigerated?
I don't know. I think it. I don't know, man. Oh, geez. All right, Stas and I may or may not, if we ever go back, because we're supposed to not have a lab anymore, but we have a lowboy somewhere that apparently has some eggnog in it, and we'll taste it. But we don't know if it's better or worse, because we don't know what it tasted like at the get-go.
Yeah, we did.
I don't.
Yeah, you had some.
I didn't.
Yes, you did.
You did. You'll know. You'll make it. Yeah, Stas doesn't pull any punches. She's, you know, Stas is mean that way. Okay. Justin from Forest Hills writes in, I was wondering if Dave had any suggestions for projects or resources to learn soldering and other basic electronic skills. I don't think I'm comfortable animating dead frogs, but I would greatly appreciate any other suggestions. Did I talk about that on the air once or something?
Most likely.
Really? Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yes, I would not start for your first soldering project animating dead frogs. But the problem with soldering is, like, you got to remember, like, I'm old, right? So, like, when I was a kid, we still used wire wrap. You know what I mean? For those of you that are really, really old. And then, like, you know, all of the components that I would solder were all through-hole components, meaning, like, you know, you put pins through a board and solder them. Whereas now, like, the cool thing to do is, like, all kind of surface-mounted stuff, which is impossible for me to solder because it's so fine pitch. Buy a decent soldering iron. First thing is buy a good soldering iron with a very fine tip. Get yourself some decent solder. Someone must make a good lead-free solder now, but most of the solders that you buy are really crap at wedding. And then just go online and choose, like, go on Adafruit or go on SparkFun and find some sort of, like, fun cooking thing that you want to do. Like, I want to build I don't have time, but I want to build some moisture meters so I can auto-water some plants. I'm going to put some citrus up and auto-water it. That'd be pretty cool, right, Stas? Mm-hmm. Right. So then you get a board with a kit and you solder it up and, you know, practice, and then eventually, you know, in no time, you'll do some microprocessor development, and then you'll be doing your own boards, and then you're going to go, you know, right, you know, nowadays it's like it's child's play. You just learn some PCB, which is the board editing software, and, you know, you output, and like 2 days later someone ships you a board in the mail. It's not even prohibitively expensive anymore. When I was a kid, if you wanted to make a board, you got out a drill, you got you took your Xerox machine, and you Xeroxed a black and white negative of what you wanted. You painted the positive. You'd paint a board, a copper board, with goop, and then you'd put the paper that you'd put the clear plastic that you put in the Xerox machine over it. You'd expose it with a light, then you'd wash off the goop that you hadn't cured. I guess it is negative. I don't remember. And then you put that in an acid etching bath, etch it out, and then you sit there with a drill and drill the holes so that you could put the resistors and parts in. In other words, it was a royal pain in the behind. And, like, often it didn't work because you didn't etch it right or anything. So the world is a much more fun place for soldering stuff now. Anyway, I don't know. Is that a decent suggestion? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway. Rebecca, what do you got for me on the twit air?
Well, we got the persimmon guy to write back, and he said it was Fuyu, F-U-Y-U.
What the hell did you call me? Anyway, yeah, yeah. So those are the ones that you eat. It's just got, like, it's got to be a pectin. It's just got to be a pectin issue. Anytime you get, like, a major setback in something, it's usually pectins. I don't know if there's a lot of other things going on. I've never made a persimmon jelly, so I don't know if they're particularly – or, like, paste. So I don't know if they're particularly kind of hard set. I don't know. They feel like they – when you – imagine in your – are you tasting one in your mouth, Daz, or no? I'm like more of a fan of not the ones that you eat fresh, but the ones that you dry out and bled down and, like, get all soft and gooey and then dry out. Do you like those, like you buy in the Asian stores?
No.
You don't like persimmon?
Not really.
What about you, Jack? What about you, Rebecca?
Lukewarm.
Lukewarm, man. All right. What, even the dried ones?
What's that?
Even the dried ones?
Yeah.
What's up, lukewarm? You guys know. Anyway, someone will tweet in the answer. All right, what else we got?
Any ideas for egg white replacement in a whiskey sour? My girlfriend and I love egg white drinks, but she's developed an allergy, from Joel.
Wow. Huh. Okay. So what would I do here? Well, you could use a milk syrup, right? So if you made a milk syrup, that would – see, when you're making egg white whiskey sour, the egg white's doing two things. It's adding texture to the drink, duh, but it's also mellowing out a little bit of the woodiness of the astringency and woodiness of the whiskey. So milk syrup would do kind of the same thing. So you could just do you know, milk syrup is 1-to-1 milk and sugar in a blender. You blend it till it dissolves. And then for every liter of syrup, you add about an ounce of 15% citric acid solution or like 2 ounces of lemon juice. While it's stirring, that'll pre-curdle a little bit. If you don't do that, the milk syrup will end up being chalky. That milk syrup will last for a long time in the fridge. It'll separate, but you can just shake it to get it back, and it foams fairly well. Not as well as a whiskey sour does with an egg white, but it foams pretty well. Another thing you can do is milk wash. So you could milk wash the bourbon just by taking bourbon, add a liter of bourbon to 250 milliliters of milk. With stirring, blend in a little bit of citric acid till it breaks, strain out the solids in a cloth, and now you have milk wash bourbon. You should use it probably within a week or so, or it'll lose its foaming ability. We're running a test now at the bar with sodium hexametaphosphate to see whether that'll stabilize it, because I got a tip from somebody in Florida that might work. So that'll increase the foaminess. You could also cheat. You could use Versa Whip or something like that and just make kind of a foam on top and shake, but you still want to add something to the whiskey sour that's going to mellow the whiskey a little bit. Otherwise, it's going to be poquito astringent, in my opinion. Anything else? You got anything else? They're going to rip us off the air in a minute.
Wait,
anyway.
We should say that you're doing a science of cooking next week at MOFAD for people to buy tickets, $30 online.
Is that true?
You'll be doing Ikijime.
Okay, listen, people. So Emma Bose, the program director at MOFAD, is like, she's a Japanophile, right? And so she wanted me to do a bunch of crap that I've done recently. I'm like, and I don't have a lot of time to develop kind of new things. Although I'm doing a lot of interesting, fun, new cooking, but just not like necessarily technical related. Like it's like the Polish food I'm interested in now and a bunch of other stuff. Although Nastasia, by the way, here's big news. Generally, Nastasia and I hate each other. Like we're bad, you know, we're like oil and water. You know what I'm saying? Like oil near the smoke point that you pour water on, and then it volatilizes and like catches fire in the fire, and then the whole kitchen's burning. Like that's normally kind of how we are. However, Nastasia is coming to my place for Thanksgiving this year.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's really cute. I just can't yell at you.
Yeah, yeah.
You said I can't.
No, you're not allowed to purposely make me get angry on Thanksgiving. That's the one stipulation. You have to put that in check.
Yeah.
No purposely making me upset. Right. No getting me spooled up and making me yell in front of my kids or anything like this. All right? Okay. But we will be doing some fun stuff. Like, for instance, I'm gonna do the turkey and the tandoor this year. Tandoor turkey. So maybe we can get – because I don't think I'm going to get a chance to shoot a turkey in the head because I'm not that good at it, and it would be illegal anyway. Maybe should we get some heritage bird?
Yeah.
Tweet out about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But that wasn't what we were talking about. You said I had to talk about
something. You're doing.
Oh yeah. So like I wanted to do something relatively new, and she was like, "Oh, you haven't done Ikijime in a long time," and I'm actually thinking about Ikijime and slaughtering techniques for my next book as part of my next book.
You're gonna have the big tub.
I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do clove oil probably, and we'll do the Ikijime. But, you know, I don't know. We got to see what kind of live fish we can source at the demo. But we're going to do that. We're going to do some oldies but goodies. Like, we're going to do 1,000-year-old eggs.
And we're going to be at the Bass Pro in Bridgeport.
Is that for real?
Yeah, 19. Well, we're still working on getting access.
The Bass Pro in Bridgeport.
But we will be there. Yeah.
Well, we'll be there when Bass Pro opens. But Stas wants to do the radio show. Hey, Jack. Nice for you to know.
Yeah.
We want to do the radio show from the Bass Pro in Bridgeport.
Down to do this.
Right?
Yeah. When?
I don't know.
It's like, the opening, and they're giving away a pontoon boat.
Oh, Stas is making this up.
Yeah, that's totally a lie.
She's making this up. That's just a lie.
They might be.
Look. We love Bass Pro.
We might have to do this. We might broadcast from.
We are
doing
it.
No, this
I'm
is
coming.
Like people. I love every little bit as we go in. It's like it's years later, but you get a little bit of real Stas as we go. This is all wishful thinking on Nastasia's part. She has not yet contacted anyone.
There's not even a Bass Pro.
I've contacted
opening.
Someone about doing the show from there,
and they said yes.
No, they haven't responded.
Exactly.
But we are going to do the show from there.
Whoa.
If it's from your car, we're going to do the show from there.
What?
Yes. It's the opening. It's the big. There's going to be famous people and hunters.
What famous people are going to be?
Hunters.
Famous hunters?
Yeah.
You're the famous person.
What about fishers? Are they going to get Peter Kaminsky to go there? Peter Kaminsky's a big fisher.
Shoot your turkey in the head.
I'm not allowed to. I don't have a license that allows me to shoot a turkey in the head in the state of Connecticut. And if I did, the only thing I would be allowed to have at the house would be an air rifle, and they don't allow hunting. How many times? They don't allow hunting turkeys with air rifles in the state of Connecticut.
Hey, guess what?
All right, next week we'll be back with more cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.